It's time to see the locker room from a completely new perspective.
If a dude's got an issue about how much somebody makes on their team, they ain't gonna say it to their face.
Come on!
Where the beautiful game intersects with black culture.
Jaleel Honey Baba, wicked try! Oh, welcome to the party, Mr. Honey Baba!
This is New Ground with Allen Hopkins Jr.
Let's go.
He could be someone who realized all this talent.
And Jaleel Eddie Baba.
Come on.
You know from 5v2, can this kid play or not?
Welcome back into New Ground on Sirius XM FC Channel 157. Allen Hopkins Jr., Jaleel Eddie Baba. So good that you're joining us once again. Week two, here we are. Mama, we showing out once again. Jaleel, how you doing today, fam?
Yo, we out here. It's lit. Everything is everything. You know, things are good. First episode was a success. Second episode is here for each and every one of you all. But I just want to take a quick second to shout out all of our listeners here on Sirius XM FC who were blowing up my line quite literally, whether it was family members, homies, whatever it is, just issuing congratulations that we've launched the show, talking about how they're excited about what we are going to unpack, but more importantly, what the people that we bring on the show will be getting into, whether it's their personal lives or their football lives or whatever it is. So shout out to all the listeners. And it's lit every single Thursday.
It is. And I appreciate, we all do, Miles Robinson, Robin Frazier, helping us christen the show. We had a great time, great conversation. This week on New Ground, we'll be catching everyone up on the MLS playoff picture and getting a real sense of how the 7, 8, 9 teams in each conference, what their chances are of making the postseason. We'll also have a quick look into a couple of really great goal-scoring records, and is Portland Timbers midfielder Evander too good for Major League Soccer? We will talk about it. We also have a sit-down and a great conversation with standout breakout player in 2024 in Major League Soccer, Real Salt Lake midfielder Emeka Anelie stops by and joins us on New Ground. And we're so excited that you could join us once again. And we start every show with a segment called Two in the Wall, because you don't need four when you have Jaleel and I. So here we go, Two in the Wall off the top. First segment up, MLS playoff picture, getting a little bit more clear here. 4 match days remain. Jaleel, the math not mathing for several teams who are now starting to see that E pop up against their name in the standings. In the East, Miami, Cincinnati, Columbus. In the West, the Galaxy, the Rapids, and Real Salt Lake are in. So when you think about here, these last 4 match days, what are some of the matches and some of the things that you're looking at, Jaleel, as you hit the road again to cover the league in terms of some of the things that are going to make a huge impact on decision day?
The Eastern conversation is jam-packed. It's extremely competitive. It's tight. It's going to come down to decision day to determine who's going to be in, especially in those 8, 9 spots. What I like from New York City FC is they're able to rescue a point late against Miami and Luis Suarez, Leo Campana, Leo Messi, all of them. But for me, it's very interesting about what is going on with Jim Curtin and the Philadelphia Union right now. They've had a year for their standards that's been up, down, sideways, back, front, however you want to class it. But their ability to deal with that adversity, keep themselves in the playoff conversation, for me, explains why Jim Curtin is one of the managers that we'll look back on in history to say he's actually one of the best managers we've seen in MLS, not only for longevity, but to be able to make sure that his club has stayed competitive for so many years on end.
Before we move to the West, who do you think Miami prefers to see? Miami, the 1 seed, Cincinnati 2, Columbus 3, New York Red Bull 4. Orlando 5, Charlotte 6. That's a surprising season for Charlotte, no doubt. New York City 7. So between Toronto and Philadelphia, Jaleel, who do you think Tata and in his way, coaches never talk like this, but who would they rather play in round 1?
I would probably say Toronto. And the reason why I would say so is because they're a team that can play with the best, but they have also shown that like they get tripped up. They'll trip themselves up. They have the propensity to give away errant passes in their defensive third, which leads to easy goals. And these are characteristics of a team that if you are making these types of errors down toward the end of the season or in the playoffs, to your potential question here, it can be a short playoff run for you if you even get into the playoffs. I would pick Toronto, but at the end of the day, I think the way that Miami's playing, I don't think they really care I think I would guess that they are more so looking within and looking internally to get themselves or to keep themselves where they want to be as far as form, rhythm, and swag.
It feels like Philadelphia would be ready to have a full-on brawl against Miami in that first round and make it very tough for them. We shall see. In the Western Conference, Galaxy hanging on to the number one seed right now. Real Salt Lake, currently the two seed. We'll be chatting with Emeka Nelly later. That's four out of the last five seasons, 14 out of 17 for RSL. Colorado, they're in. They're the three seed right now, hosting Seattle. LAFC and Houston, 4 and 5. I think both teams really in 4 and 5 don't want to see the other team there at 4 and 5. And then I'll pose the same question, Ja. Vancouver's holding on to 7, Portland's 8th, Minnesota 9th. Of those three teams, who do you like to get in to the round one of the postseason?
I like both Vancouver and Portland, but I just love the way Portland plays, and it hurts me to say it as a sounder myself. Like, it hurts me to say that.
I can hear it in your voice.
We don't mix. We don't mix with Portland. We don't vibe with Portland, as you know, when I'm you know, have my Sounders hat on. But you know me. I give love. I give flowers. I give shout outs when they are deserved. I don't hold back on that. And this Portland team, it's almost surprising to me, if you watch the one-off game, that they're in eighth. Their attack is unbelievable. It is extremely entertaining. They're the best team in MLS in transition on the attacking side. You know, nobody has an attacking quartet that is as efficient as far as stats are concerned in MLS. So there's just so many things in that Portland Timbers side that I want to see them going further and further further and further up the Western Conference, but I also want to see them go deep into the playoffs because of their style of football under Phil Neville and with the players that are in front of Evander. Nah, this is crazy. This is crazy.
I could hear in your voice anything related to PDX, you could hardly form your mouth to say without a doubt. I'm sure your phone will be blowing up with all your Sounders alums even questioning how you could even say their name. With that being said, I know you're a defender, and we're going to talk goal scoring here, but a couple of really interesting records. First, a Galaxy first team with 4 players, which is amazing to think when you think about the Galaxy goal scorers back in the day. First time they've had 4 players with 10-plus goals in the season, Jovalech, and then the brothers Peck, Puig, and Painsil, all with 10-plus goals. And really, Peck, Puig, and Painsil are the guys when you think about their double-figure guys in goals and assists. But then also the other side, and probably a bit better in terms of a scoring record, Portland's own version of Triple Espresso, Jaleel, Jonathan Rodriguez, Felipe Mora, Evander, all with 14 goals or more. Evander, of course, just doing really, I think, stupid stuff. 18 assists, 15 goals, had a hand in probably so many other sort of hockey assists along the ways and plays that started goals. So is Evander too good for MLS, and how has he been able to somewhat, I think, fly under the radar in terms of national recognition?
Yeah, I mean, you know, my boys in Portland, they just love this guy. They rave about how good he is. And just like, he a stoic dude too. You know, like, His demeanor is super mellow, and I would say he's the silent assassin of MLS right now. Is he too good for MLS? No, because the greatest player to ever play the game is in MLS. No, because
end on it.
No, because Christian Benteke is in MLS. No, because Luis Suarez is in MLS. No, because you have players that are not only playing at the highest heights of international football, but also too, like, players that have the pedigree right now as we stand to play for some of the better teams internationally on the club stage as well. And he fits in that category of the best players, highest performers in this league. And, you know, I think it's, from my perspective, it's an honor to cover him on an official capacity, but it's also an honor to just watch him ball as a fan, because I love players that can ball, of course, and can categorically take over a game. But the biggest trait that I love in top ballers is those who make players around them exponentially better. And there's no way that Felipe Mora, Rodriguez, Moreno are performing at the clip that they're performing without Evander.
When going through the goal scorers, it really prompted the question for me to you is there's only one American in the top 30 goal scorers in the league right now, and that's Jordan Morris. He's got 13 goals. Is that at all a question we should be asking in terms of, in your opinion, where has the American goal scorer gone? And is that something in which in the player development cycle we need to be focused in on? Or is it just like every other league in the world has great foreign players who sort of put the ball in the back of the net?
Well, first and foremost, thank you for perfectly segueing me away from the Portland Timbers and back to my Seattle Sounders.
I got your back.
See? Hey, thank you. Thank you.
And you go forward, I got cover. I'm going to stay at home right back. Go do your thing.
There we go. It's one of those things where I look at things from, do people think that there's a potential problem with American goal scorers? I'm like, nah, this shows you how special Jordan Morris's career is. That's like just how I naturally look at things like this. For Jordan Morris to be the only American goal scorer in the top 30 of, goal scorers in the MLS in 2024, that means that, hey, look, he might not be jumping off the page as one of the players that we should be talking about in 2024, but here's a reason why we should be talking about him more. And you ask, where has the American goal scorer gone? They ain't gone nowhere, but maybe Europe or Mexico. Ooh. Don't forget that Brandon Vasquez is an American. He's in Monterrey,
right.
Tearing
that's
it up.
That's right. Kate Cowell's been doing his thing at Chivas, and we certainly have been exporting players.
You know, it's interesting, but the way that I really think about the whole argument is what has happened with the American goal scorer or X, Y, and Z. I personally think that the top end American player is on the attacking side is arguably better than it was before.
Correct.
So they are getting more opportunities in other leagues. That's why, in my opinion, you aren't seeing as many, Landon Donovan's, Clint Dempsey's, Josie Altidore's in MLS right now, because Pulisic, Wea, Balogun,
Poppy,
all these guys, Haji Wright, Sargent, Pepe, they don't play in MLS anymore because Champions League clubs want them. So I think that's more what it is. And on the flip, MLS is getting better as well as a league and as a product, where now players who are, Benfica players, a.k.a. Petar Musa, they're coming to MLS in their prime. Cucho Hernandez is coming from the championship and taking MLS by storm in his prime. So this is Christian Benteke is coming and playing in MLS when he is still wrecking
yes.
cats. So before, you would maybe have these players 3 or 4 years later in their career. Now they're coming when they're 23 to 30. So I think it's more multifaceted of a phenomenon than just, Americans aren't balling because they aren't necessarily killing the top 30 of MLS goal scorers. The league's getting better, and MLS forwards and attackers are getting better, so they're playing in other leagues.
And to put a footnote on the Golden Boot race, Christian Benteke has 19 goals with 4 to go, so they certainly have a chance for DC United's forward to lead the league in goals scored when it's all said and done. Time for us to step aside. Coming up on New Ground on SiriusXM FC Channel 157, Real Salt Lake standout breakout player, their new long-term signing, and a player that has clearly burst on the scene, Emeka Anelie, joins us to talk about just about everything in terms of his journey and how he feels about his team heading into the postseason once again. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to New Ground on SiriusXM FC Channel 157.
Welcome back to New Ground on SiriusXM FC.
Thanks for being a part of it and for allowing it to be a part of you. It is New Ground on Sirius XM FC Channel 157, Alan Hopkins, Jill Anibaba. And helping us today cover New Ground is Real Salt Lake standout breakout player, none other than number 14, Emeka Anelli. Emeka, welcome to New Ground.
I appreciate you guys for having me. Thank you so much.
Well, first, before we get into so much to unpack about your story, about the team this year, Jahlil and I are Nigerian. I am less obvious than Jahlil through our government names. But as Jahlil said to me, he said, no, I don't want to just hear him say his full name. He wants to hear your village name. So please do put everyone on it. Give us the full version of your name.
My full name, Chukwu Emeka Samto Ukachi Anelli.
Can you give a, can you, do you know the meanings of them as well? Or
yes, it's, thank it's, you. Chukwu Emeka means God is beautiful. God is beautiful, which he is. So thankful for that. The reason why I'm in this place right now.
Bless up. This is what I like to hear.
Your story, Emeka, is one from the outside, looks like an overnight sensation, a meteoric rise, a hockey stick sort of growth curve, but we all know nothing happens by accident. And we certainly understand that you put in a lot of work to get here. Why has it popped for you at Real Salt Lake in these last couple of seasons, in your opinion?
I think the biggest thing for me, I would have to say the trust from my coaches and the organization. I mean, Pablo, the head coach in general, I think he's definitely a very tough coach, but I think you need that when you're trying to achieve something great in anything in life. And even though he's very tough, I think he's pushed me to some limits that have been very hard this season and last season as well. But that's allowed me to, I think it's allowed me to progress super quickly in the professional setting. And I think just as that continues, our relationship continues to grow, my relationship with other players at Real Salt Lake, other staff members at Real Salt Lake continues to grow, hopefully they can progress me even further in my playing.
Yeah, Emeka, it's interesting that the first thing that you mentioned is the trust from the managers. I think a lot of people don't understand that you need your manager to believe in you to even step on the field, for people to know who you are. But in my generation, when I was growing up, when I was just a little bit younger than you, Paolo Mascheroni was one of the best midfielders in the U.S. men's national team setup at that time. And I came into the league playing against him. So since you played the exact same position as him, how much have you been able to fortify your relationship with him? How much does he pull you aside and coach you as a central midfielder that he was?
Yeah, that's definitely been a big theme about it. Focusing on the little tiny details. I remember, especially in preseason, because last season I came in kind of wanting to play six or an eight, but then, you know, things don't always go your way when you're first. So I think just you didn't want to get on the field. So I started playing right back mainly all of last season. I think most of my midfield right back. But then this preseason and this season is where I started to play central midfield. I remember this preseason, I felt like Pablo was on me really tough. Every little detail, checking my shoulder, my body position. I remember the one thing you said, your number should never be facing either of the goalkeepers. It always has to be sideways on so you can receive it and know what you're going to do with it when you get it. And just all those little tiny things, especially in preseason, he harped on me about it every single day. I kid you not. I think it was every single day, every single training. And that kind of just got, you know, wired in my brain to try and play that way. And so I think just him giving me those little tips have been fantastic. And it's another thing that he always says. He says it about all of the central midfielders, I think, at our club. He always says that all of us here, including myself, we all had more talent than Pablo. I don't know if that's true. That didn't really bother Pablo back in his days. But the thing that Pablo had was he had just this killer mentality and this killer instinct that he never wanted to lose. And no matter what the circumstance was, no matter what the game was, you can always see it in the way he played and the way he carried himself. And he that's one of the things that he kind of wants me to work on and grow on, because that's also like a leadership skill, I feel like, as well. And so that's part of my game that I've been thinking about recently, just working on that other side of it as well, that Pablo's helped me go through that.
Emeka Anelli joining us here on New Ground. Emeka, your journey is becoming less and less of the experience that I had and Jahlil had in terms of a full pathway to college. And when you think back to just two falls ago, you were in the Ivy League, leading Cornell to the Sweet 16 for the first time in 30 years. How do you wrap your head around those recent memories, those core memories in Cornell, to where you're at right now, poised to be one of the leaders on a very strong postseason team?
I think for me, I always wanted to go to college, but I also always wanted to play professional soccer. And so it's kind of trying to find that right balance. And I know you guys, we just spoke a little bit earlier about, you guys are both Nigerian, you know, having Nigerian parents in high school when I was playing with the academy, you know, their first thought for me was always, got to go to college, got to go graduate, get a degree. You never know what could happen with soccer, an injury, this or that. I ended up choosing to go to Cornell. I always wanted to get a degree, but I always had soccer as my forefront. The reason why I chose to go to Cornell is because the coach there, I think coaches really do play a lot in your soccer journey. But my coach there, John Smith, he was the former associate head coach at Stanford, just came over to Cornell, I think, a year before I got there, maybe 2 years before I got there. And Cornell was a very, you would think Cornell, I think, just a knockoff team, which is what they were that before John got there. I think they had one win the season before I got there, or maybe like three or four wins. And then John gets there, he gets his recruiting class in. I come in with my recruiting class. And I think the 4 years I was there, I think we had at least 10 wins in each season that we played. So he really just turned the culture around in that place. And it's him that I owe my mentality that I have towards soccer and towards almost anything in life, about basically never giving up and having that, just that steely mentality that nothing's ever going to faze you. He really instilled that as the Cornell culture. And I think there's a lot of similarities in the culture that my coach John Smith had at Cornell, and that Pablo kind of tries to bring here at RSL. I think there's a lot of overlaps in it. And I think that's kind of another reason why I've fared so well, because I'm so used to how Pablo kind of coaches and the mentality that he looks for and the intensity that he looks for. I'm used to that from my 4 years at Cornell. So I think it prepared me pretty well, software-wise. And then obviously education-wise, I'm able to graduate, which was fantastic. Meet a lot of amazing people, professors. And I had a great time, a lovely time at Cornell.
That's dope, man.
Yeah, it really is, Jaleel. I just had one quick follow-up on that. Because you were an academy player, how much do you feel your pathway would be different if you had chosen the homegrown pathway versus going to college for 4 years, that incredible life experience that college has all given us, and how you've quickly, in your second season, become one of the leaders, one of the captains of this club? How different do you think your pathway would have been if you had just gone the homegrown route as opposed to graduating from college?
It's a great question. I think there could have been a lot of differences, honestly, if I would have went the homegrown route. I mean, when you're going the homegrown route, you're joining a professional team when you're 17, 18. Like, you're still young. Like, we have 17, 18-year-old academy kids or homegrowns training up with us, and like, you look at them and you're like, still really young. So I would have been really young. I really wouldn't have known myself, honestly, or been able to navigate as well the professional scene and like the things that come along with it, as well as I can do now being 24. So I think maybe I would have gotten to the league earlier. Maybe I could have secured a place, but you really never know. I don't think I was as built physically as well. I think going through college and getting a little bit older, playing a little bit longer growing up, I think made me have a more physical stature to be able to, kind of solidify myself in this league. But then I think the mental side, I think, an even bigger challenge. I feel like my coach at Cornell is always saying that soccer is, it's technical abilities, physical abilities, but the mental aspect of it, I think it's overlooked a lot of the time. I think that's a huge aspect of it. And I think to try and play in the league with so many games, you know, travel, social media now, all those things, you have to have a good mental space, mental headspace. And me being 17, 18 years old, would I have had as strong mental space that I had now? You never know, because I obviously chose to go to college, but I think there would be some differences in that aspect, some negative, some positive, but I'm glad I took the pathway that I chose. But it could have definitely been different if I tried to really go the homegrown route or something like that.
Yeah, it's mad interesting. One thing I wanted to tap in on, you talked about culture at Cornell, you talked about culture at at Real Salt Lake. But growing up as a Nigerian kid, whether you're a first-generation, second-generation immigrant, one thing that your parents are going to make sure they do is they instill the Nigerian culture in you. Talked about the importance of education in your family. It brings back memories of my dad saying stuff to me when I was like 12, like, you be good in school because they will not know this family just for football. Things like this. But like, tell us, in all seriousness, tell us why it's so important for you to be known for more than just being a footballer and being able to use your mind to not only be able to navigate the profession, but be able to navigate your life at the highest clip possible.
Yeah, I think one of the best things, my dad always said that one of the best things, when I was thinking about going to Cornell, and there were some other schools that I was also looking about going to that weren't as educationally prestigious as Cornell. And my dad was saying, like, and that they're much better at soccer, though. And I was obviously more focused on soccer. So I was like, I want to go to this school, much better at soccer. Obviously, I can still get a college education, which is just fantastic. My dad was like, you got to look at everything. You know, the investment that you're putting into your college and things like this, it's not just the four-year program, the four-year degree that you're going to go through. It's going to be a 45-year-long investment, because once you graduate, once you finish playing soccer, there's more to life than that. Your life doesn't end at 35, 40 years old. You know, you continue on with it, and you have to have other skills, other interests, other things that you can do when soccer's not there. And so I think my dad and my mom really instilled that in me. And then I think me just seeing them, the work that they did to provide for my family, the hard work that they continue to do right now, and just their attitude towards everything is something that I've never really seen before. It's untypeable. And so that kind of drives me to want to do more than just soccer, but then to also try and achieve as much as I can while I'm playing and really take it to a whole new level, whatever I can do with it.
Emeka Anelli joining us here on New Ground on Sirius XM SC Channel 157. I know a handful of people in your organization, Real Salt Lake, Trey Fitzgerald, Kurt Schmidt, are people. Siggy Schmidt's one of Siggy Schmidt's son, and Siggy's had a profound impact on my life, and I remain close to his family as best I can, particularly through soccer. And one of the things that's so impressive, I believe, is really the impression you've left on everyone after 18 months. But real talk on the field, you mentioned how Pablo's coaching you up. It reminded me of a point guard basketball coach coaching his point guard really, really hard to get the most out of him. But when Pablo tells other people and he tells the media that he's never seen a player process information as quickly as you do, and he compares you to Diego Chara and Darlington Nagbe, what does that mean for you in terms of where your career can go, not only for club? Real Salt Lake just signed you to a new contract with a club option, always a club option, Jahlil, through 2029, but also your U.S. men's national team career as well. And remember, Pablo is someone who's done it as well as anyone in his generation in the league. So when you hear that kind of praise, how does it sort of lead you to believe that you're on the right path in your career?
Yeah, I think it gives me all the confidence in the world. I think we were talking a little bit earlier, Jahlil, about how confidence in the manager is kind of what can kind of propel you to how you perform. So I think hearing Pablo, you know, say those words and compare me to those players, it means
no
a lot to me.
Like, no pressure. Diego and Darlington, like just regular, right? Regular, degular, as
normal people. But you know, with high expectations, you know, you still gotta have to put in the work to get there. Because I haven't done anything so far these 18 months. Those players have done wonders over their 10-year, 15-year career. So I'm just at the bottom of the totem pole. So I think just continuing to put in, you know, the hard work each day in trainings, outside of trainings and games, and just take it, you know, day by day, week by week, game by game, and see what comes of it. You know, just try and, you know, stay humble and really work my way up to hopefully get to the position that some of those amazing players are at.
Oh, so far, so good. You have time to stick around for another segment? We're having a good time.
Yes, I do. Yes, I do.
Awesome. Coming back after break, Emeka stays with us, and we continue to talk about RSL and their chances in the postseason in 2024. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to New Ground with Alan and Jahlil on SiriusXM Channel 157.
Let's get back to new ground on Sirius XMFC.
Oh, it's in! Well, I'm not quite sure Gomez meant to cross that ball. It doesn't matter to Anelli. He ghosted in at the far post. And RSL of the opening goal.
Welcome back to New Ground. Alan Hopkins, Jahlil Anibaba, joined by Emeka Anelli, continuing our wonderful conversation. And off the jump here, you've been in Salt Lake now for a couple of years, another postseason run. How do you feel about this group so far and how the season's gone to this point?
I feel fantastic about the group that we have and how the season's gone so far as well. I think we started off really, really well. I think I was the first couple games getting our footing, a couple wins, a couple losses, and then in that early kind of stretch, we went on a 15-game unbeaten streak. I mean, it felt like we just had that belief in the group. I think you guys know it when you have that feeling that even if you go down a goal or go down two goals, like you're always going to get it back. That during that streak, I just felt like no matter what, no matter who we came up against, home or away, that went down a goal, we were going to get a goal back. We were up a goal, we were going to hold the lead, win 1-0. So went on that 15-game unbeaten streak, and then got into the summer months. And the summer months are challenging. You know, it's the 5-6 months into the season. People's legs are tired. People's minds are tired. We kind of slumped off a little bit. Leagues Cup happened, a little break. Then you have like 2 weeks before games with international breaks and things. Just a really choppy summer kind of. And towards the end of the summer where we lost a couple games that hopefully don't come back and bite us. So feeling really confident about the group that we have and the things that we can achieve in the postseason. Hopefully 4 games left, obviously, to hopefully secure first place, honestly. LA Galaxy still in reaching distance, and then hopefully secure a CONCACAF Champions League spot as well. So a lot to look forward to, a lot to achieve, hopefully, and we'll just see how it goes.
You said you're feeling fantastic about the group. You better feel fantastic about the group. y'all got straight up hitters.
When I
look at MLS roster specifically, but of course any team, I think you have to have a minimum of 3 to 5 just hitters in there, especially that can affect goal scoring. You guys have just so many electric players, obviously including yourself, but you talk about Diego Luna, Julio. One of my favorite players on y'all team besides you is Brody too. Y'all can just ball. So my question for you is, take us into the locker room. What are the vibes like? What's the 5v2 like? Are cats just dancing when they hit a nutmeg? Like what's the word? What's good in Salt Lake?
Who's running table tennis right now?
The vibes are fantastic. Table tennis is a good one. You know, I try and get myself on the sticks, but honestly, I'm low key slacking a little bit. Jay Glass.
Yo, you're letting Nigeria down by.
I don't play.
Table tennis player. No. That's unacceptable.
I don't think I play enough is the problem.
Jahlil thinks he could have been an Olympic medalist, by the way.
How good is he actually?
I don't know a Nigerian that doesn't have confidence on the ping pong table. You need to fix that.
I have confidence, but I know my limits. I know my limits, basically. I don't know if Jahlil knows his limits when he gets on there. he feels like he can get there in the Olympics and he'll be able to beat anybody. But the vibes are great in the locker room, 5v2, things like that. Everyone's just eager and excited to just play football. You know, like you can see it when we train. Trains are super intense. Everyone's flying around, flying into tackles. Arguments happen, but I think that's actually a good part. You know, if they happen on the field, and you know, you settle it off the field. You know, we're friends again. I feel like everybody in the locker room is like a good family as well. So I think we all respect each other. We all love each other, and we all want to achieve something special. So I think the vibes in the locker room are just amazing. Spanish guy. We obviously have a big Spanish speaking group on the team.
You speak Spanish or what?
Un poco.
Oh, I'm
working. There we go.
A little bit. I can communicate a decent amount with, I think, some of them. Most of them. All of them. But even with the little tiny language barrier that we have, I think we're still all super close to each other, super great friends, which is why, you know, we've been able to achieve some of the things that we've achieved this season.
Well, one of the exciting parts of Emeka Anelli joining us on New Ground here on Sirius XM FC, you lead a team in minutes, right around you, and it seems like you and Ojeda are just flip-flopping on who's got the leader in minutes or so. But to my point, you played a ton of right back as a rookie. You started correct me if I'm wrong, the first game of the season, I thought, at right back. And now you've been in the double pivot ever since. How much has right back helped you become a better player in the double pivot? And when you couple that with your attacking forward nature from Cornell, how's that sort of added to this really fun mix of skills and talent that you bring to the pitch every day?
I played right back all last season, and then first game of the season against Inter Miami, started at right back as well. I think just getting minutes under my belt professionally last year at right back, I think it just allowed me to grow into the double pivot role. I feel like playing at right, it's definitely a different position wise, just because when you're playing in the double pivot, you have people pressing you from all different sides. Well, right back, you basically have the whole game in front of you. So I think it's different in that sense, but it's the same in the sense of, you know, your decision-making, knowing what you want to do with the ball before you get it, things like that, which is kind of what I really tried to focus on in my first year. So it's definitely helped me grow into the double pivot role, which I think has gone really well this year as well. I think we got a little new tactical approach this year. Last year we played, it was strictly like a 4-4-2 when we build up. So it was two pivots as well, but it was more like our pivots, they weren't as close to like our center backs to build out and things like that. We didn't really try and build out as much. But now we kind of build out with three center backs and then two pivots. So the two pivots are really close. So it's just really being good in a tight area or like a tight little box. And if you can do that with checking your shoulder, knowing what you're going to do with the ball before you get it, your body shape, then you can play that position very well. And then that's just on the ball. Then off the ball, the team that we are, we love to press. Pablo would say that. We love to defend. We want to defend. And so
you making Pablo happy when we with defend that quote well, right there, boy. That's one. He's going to love that. Like, get that to Pablo.
I think, man, straight up.
Some coach's pet stuff right there. We love it. Straight up. We love the press.
You say he flip-flopping on who's leading the team with minutes. He's trying to make sure that he leads the team with minutes. You want Pablo to watch this episode so bad.
For the next 10 years, I like to defend and press. Putting that out there.
But at the collective, we do try and press well because we try and win the ball high up the field so that we can give the ball to our attacking players, Chicho, Diego, Diogo, Crooks, you know, our tens, our wingers, Anderson, really, they're just fantastic when they get the ball in good positions. So I think it's just been going well.
No, that's what's up. And it's been going more than well. My question for you next is two-part. I got two things for you. You're in your second year of the league. You're already a leader. You're emerging as one of the names that people are just looking out for on the team scout. But one, what is something that you now understand about the experience of playing in MLS that has completely surprised you? And then two, what is your absolute favorite part about being a footballer, a professional footballer?
I love those.
Mm-hmm. Good questions.
So the first part was what has surprised me in the league?
Mm-hmm.
I think how grueling the season is. You know, for me coming from college, we only played, like our season was only like 2 or 3 months. And I kind of realized that last season when I started my first season here, we got into like July or August and I kind of just hit a wall. Like,
that's not
necessarily physically, but mentally, I was just like, gee, man, it seemed long. We still have 3 months,
are we there yet?
3 months to go. Like, yeah, I didn't realize, like, I feel like, because when you just watch it on TV and you see them, all you see when you watch it on TV is players turning up for the game. You don't see them training. You don't see them like in the gym. You don't see any of that.
So when I'm watching on TV, fits. That's all you see, man. The clean whip and the walk-in
fits. You see the walk-in
fits
and you just judge their fit. And that's it. And you're like, oh, okay, cool. We played the game. Oh, that's it. Blah, blah, blah. But now that I'm actually doing it and I get through that, and I'm getting through the season, the first season of this season, now, too, I'm like, wow, it's long, it's grueling. I enjoy it, honestly, but I just didn't realize that it was going to be like this tough. And then the second part of the question was...
What is your absolute most favorite part about the experience of being a footballer, professional footballer?
Yeah. I would probably say two things. I think it would be just the vibes and the relationships in the locker room. Man, like, I think last year I was a little bit more timid. I think it was just my first year in the league. I didn't really know anybody as much, but then I've like grown and made some relationships with some people on the team. It's just a good time, you know, going into training and just seeing the guys every single day. Like, I feel like I've talked to some retired pros, and I say that's the one thing they miss the most is, you know, just the locker room vibe. So I just want to, I completely love that right now. And don't want to overlook it. And then my second thing would be, I love playing at home, but I love playing on the road. Just some hostile fans. Just it kind of just gets me going for the game. You know, when you like score a goal and you're celebrating in front of, in the away end, or you know, you make a tackle, it just fires me up. And it's just fun to see all those cities and those fans, you know, watching me play soccer. Like it's something that I wouldn't trade for anything. I just really enjoy that.
That's why Pablo love you, because you were trying to find the words to describe what Pablo was like as a player. He was a dog. He was a straight up dog. So yeah, man, keep all of that fire inside of you alive. It'll never hold you back.
Emeka, is there a post-game moment since you've been in the league where you're like, mama, I made it? Is there someone who dapped you up after the game, or someone who said something like to NFL rookie quarterbacks or something? Did anyone sort of give you that wink and a nod like, yeah, this is my time, this is where I'm meant to be, God is good, let's go get it?
You know what? One that actually just happened recently was Mark Anthony Kay. Actually, he plays for the Reds. You know, when I was a rookie, we had the rookie symposium down in Orlando.
Yep.
And he probably doesn't even remember me. I don't even know, but he spoke there actually. I think part of the MLSPA maybe, but he gave me to all of us draftees. Probably about like 90-95 of us. Fast forward now, it's been about probably a little bit more than a year and a half. We played the Revs at home, and then we're walking off the field, and he sees me and I see him, and like we tap each other up, and he says, "Really good game out there. You guys are having a lot of fun out there. Huh? You look really good." And that just made me kind of smile, because there was this moment on the sideline where I think me and O'Hara were like kind of passing the ball with our heads, trying to like get around them. We almost got it through, and I think that's what he was talking about. But I think just him recognizing me and dapping me up was a nice moment.
He had to give you respect. Yeah. You guys tried to play some soccer tennis.
We almost did. I gotta find the clip. The clip is good. You have to like the clip for sure. Right on the sideline too. We're just
oh man. Hey, that's an era now where they let you play. I'm old school, where someone would have came for you in some sort of 2-foot fashion, but you can't do that these days for sure.
One of the things that I love about, you know, growing up in a Nigerian household is that your parents, your relatives, your aunties, your uncles, they have a way of speaking power into you, right? Yeah. So now that you are at what you know as the pinnacle of your professional life, what is something that your parents used to always tell you when you were trying to rev your engine that is now ringing in your brain when they were speaking power into you when you were younger, Emeka?
It's a great question. It's a great question.
I think one of the best things that my parents always told me was that you can't necessarily rely on others to do something for you. Whatever you want to do, you have to do it yourself, and you have to put in all of the work and put in all of the time to it. I think was something that they instilled in me over and over and over again. Whether that was school, like when I was studying for something, they'd say, "You got to put in the work yourself. You got to put in the work yourself. No one else can do it for you. You have to do it for yourself." And I think that came from education first. From honestly, when I was credit for like a science test or social studies test in seventh grade, they would say that. And then when I went through the academy and I had a hard time, I think it was ninth grade, maybe it was when I was 99, 98, and I was the young group of the 99s, and I was really small then. And they said the same thing, like, nobody else can do it for you. You got to do it for yourself. You got to put on the work. You got to believe in yourself. All of those things, they continue to tell that to me. And I think that's driven me to where I am through education, through Cornell, through the academy, then through Cornell soccer, and then through where I'm at right now at Real Salt Lake. And I feel like back then, honestly, I think about that. And like, well, I probably thought about that back then, and I was just like, why do they keep telling me this? Like, is it even true? Blah, blah, blah. And now this is actually kind of the first time I'm actually like remembering them saying this to me, and I'm thinking about it right now, and I'm just thinking about how true it really is and how I just need to think about that more, honestly. I'm glad you brought this question to me, because I feel like I can drive you places, can take you anywhere. So that's just something that's going to continue to stick with me. I'm glad you brought it back up now. Thank you for that. When it's something that I'm going to continue to take in my career as well.
Emeka, I often say that if we remember the language of gratitude will always know the language of happiness. And you, my friend, understand that. And we are so excited for you. The best is ahead. You're making it happen, putting in the work on and off the field. Kurt Schmidt, everyone there at Real Salt Lake, talk about you first as a person, second as a player. And we know your ceiling as a player is very high. So it just speaks a lot to how you're raised and how you're living your life. So glad you could join us. We appreciate you joining Jahlil and I here on New Ground on SiriusXM FC Channel 157. And my guy, the best is ahead. And you guys make a little postseason run. We'll have to have you back on and really get into the nitty-gritty of the MLS Cup chase for sure. But appreciate your time, my guy.
Thank you. Appreciate you guys. Thank you very much.
When we come back, we'll put a bow on this show and give out our flowers. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to New Ground on SiriusXM FC.
No one covers the beautiful game like New Ground on SiriusXM FC.
Welcome back to New Ground. We're putting a bow on today's show here on SiriusXM FC Channel 157. Alan Hopkins Jr. and Jahlil Hannibaba. So glad you could join us today. It's that time of the show where Ja and I give out our flowers to celebrate the excellence that we see in the game and beyond, our weekly recognition of those making real positive moves in the world of soccer. Last week, my flowers went to Sepp Hines, head coach of Orlando Pride, as they make their way through an undefeated NWSL season. This week, my flowers are going to new Colorado Rapids signee Reggie Cannon, who scores on his debut on his triumphant return to Major League Soccer. The former FC Dallas star had a stint in Europe. He is now back, and what a great way to mark his return with a goal for Chris Armas's playoff-bound Colorado Rapids. So this week, my flowers go to Reggie Cannon. Jahlil, who are you giving your bouquet to?
Yeah, you got to tap in with everything that Chris Armas has got going on in Colorado. It's exciting. Reggie Cannon is one of the newest, brightest spots. The homie is back. And if you don't like Reggie Cannon, I think you're probably in the conversation for being a bad... Yes, you're probably in the conversation for being a bad person. Like, Reggie is one of the nicest guys ever. Like, he'll smile when people are cussing him out. Like, he's just such a great dude. And I'm happy, again, that he's back in MLS. Shout out Reggie Cannon. Last week, I gave flowers to the homie Weston McKennie, for everything he's been doing as of late and, of course, over the last few years with the U.S. Men's National Team and Juventus. This week, I am going to, again, it's a little bit wild, and this is not intentional. I'm staying with Team Lightskin, and I am giving my flowers to Nathan Saliba. This is a young player out of the Montreal Impact Academy who is bar none one of their best players right now. Got his international debut with the Canadian men's national team earlier this month. And scored his first MLS goal in amazing fashion in a midweek fixture at New England.
Saliba, twisting and turning! Oh, spectacular! A pearler of a curler!
This goal is beautiful. Takes the touch from a pass that comes a little bit wide. He's back to goal. Hits an amazing little pirouette. Technique is perfect. Yeah. And then boom, top corner. It's an unbelievable goal. Curler of a goal, and it's the standout best goal of that game, which had three other very quality goals, and he gets the game-winning assist on the weekend fixture to Joseph Martinez. Joseph Martinez finishes it off and gets his 111th career goal, but my flowers go to Nathan Saliba.
Nathan Saliba and Reggie Cannon getting this week's New Ground flowers for the week, and certainly a bright spot for Montreal, to say the least. That'll do it for this episode of New Ground, which is produced by Wayne Edwards and Stephen Araldo. Special thanks to our New Ground team, Megan Fontenot, Freddie Morris, and our music man, Mason Pace. You can follow us on Instagram at New Ground Show, and you can listen to previous episodes on the SiriusXM app. For Jahlil Hannibaba, I'm Alan Hopkins Jr. We'll see you next week on New Ground on SiriusXM FC Channel 157. Thanks, as always, for listening. See you next time.